Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, we've got a really interesting one for you today. So I hope you've got time, as wherever you are in the car or at home, you've got a chance to listen to the whole program. If you don't, go back to my website, davidholland.com, and listen to this entire program. I'm joined on the program today, calling in. His name is Alex Stone. He's an author. He's a magician. He's got a master's in English and a Is it a master's degree, Alex, or what is it from? You got a master's in physics, and then you've also got a degree from Harvard in English. Anyway, Alex Stone, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, Alex. So you know all about magic, but not just tricks and whatnot, but the whole psychology and how people think about it. In fact, you wrote a book called FoolingHoudini.com is the website, Fooling Houdini. And I've already started reading it myself, I have to confess. Fooling Houdini, Magicians, Mentalists, Math Geeks, and the Hidden Powers of the Mind. And they can go to that website, FoolingHoudini.com, to check it out. Give our listeners a quick background on you, and then we can talk about what this book's about, but then also get into some of the insight that you've developed in studying magic over the years and how it affects how people behave. And of course, that ties into some of this nonsense we hear about scams and people stealing people's identity and all that stuff.
Right. Well, I started doing magic when I was a kid. My dad gave me a magic kit when I was 5 years old, and, you know, I got into it. It was one of those kid simple tricks, you know. And my first gig was my own sixth birthday party, which actually didn't go very well. I was heckled very badly. But, I don't know, I kept with it. My dad and I really kind of bonded over it. And then years later, I moved to New York, and I discovered this subculture of people that do magic obsessively. And this is a world of secrecy and deception. There are all these magic societies and rituals. And
that none of us know about, right?
That's almost completely invisible to most people, but which is very, very large. I mean, there's hundreds of these societies. There's one in every city. There are these secret gatherings of magicians that take place, you know, in the backs of diners and dingy pizzerias. There's even these magic tournaments. There's even a magic Olympics that takes place. It's the World Championships of Magic. But sometimes magicians call it the Magic Olympics. It takes place every 3 years, and it actually just happened in England right before the non-magical Olympics took place. So I got really interested in this world. I became very involved in it, and eventually I decided that, you know, well, there'd never been anything written about this whole subculture, and it, like you said, it's not something most people even know exists, and so I wanted to kind of show that world to people. And then the other side of it is that I'm a science writer by sort of training, and I began to see that there were a lot of really interesting connections between magic and science, and in particular psychology, but also things like mathematics and physics and whatnot. And I really wanted to explore these basic questions that relate to magic, but also to our daily lives. Like, you know, why, like you said, why do we enjoy being deceived, and sometimes why do we take pleasure in deceiving others? You know, what are the impact? How does secrecy affect our lives and our relationships? Why does the mind succumb to illusion? And what does that say about how we perceive the world on a daily basis? What is the nature of misdirection? And how does that affect us, you know, when we're, say, driving in the car or watching TV or whatnot? You know, how does magic relate to scams and crime and deception and things like that? So Fooling Houdini is, you know, partly a story of this subculture, partly a memoir of my own fascination with magic, but it's also an exploration of these more basic human questions.
It's such a huge topic. Somebody would have to write a book about it, but of course you did. So Alex Stone is with us. The book is Fooling Houdini, foolinghoudini.com. And, you know, the thing that really amazes me, Alex, is that, you know, there's so many different angles to this, but there's this entire subculture, as you put it, that there's so much magic going on around us that we don't even know about it, us regular people that are not part of your special group that runs around in little cloaks and have your daggers and stuff.
You know? Exactly. The muggles.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Fascinating stuff. All right, well, we got to take a quick break. Alex, come back. I want you to share with us some of the highlights of what you've seen. And of course, my listeners, this is a money show, so my listeners are going to be very curious to hear how what you've seen in magic and this whole world of deception and misdirection and all this, how that translates to things that cause people to do what they do over on the scams and all that kind of stuff. So stay right there. We'll be right back.
All right. Sounds good.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Alex Stone is my guest. He's an author. He's a magician. Degrees from Harvard and Columbia. A true student of the magic profession or trade. And he's written the book, Fooling Houdini. FoolingHoudini.com is the website. And so, all right, Alex, we can get into some more stuff about the book, but you got to answer the burning question that our listeners have in their minds, which is, how does what you've learned help us understand about why people do what they do and tricking people, especially with their money or in relationships and all that stuff?
Yeah, well, I spent, in one of the chapters of Fooling Houdini, I talk about street scams. And I spent a lot of time hanging out, well, studying, kind of casing these three-card Monty guys who work on the streets of New York. And
yeah.
The three-card Monty, for those who aren't familiar, is, you know, the three cards that they mix them around, you know, find the ace. And there's a lot of misconceptions about this game. It's an old scam, but it still works, and it's quite remarkable. It actually, a lot of people think it's just one guy, but it usually is a crew of like six or eight people, and they each play a role. It's a bit of theater, really.
Really?
And I've seen people, you know, on the streets of New York lose hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and I calculated that these guys can make several thousand dollars in an afternoon. And
I'm in the wrong line of work here, I think.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah, call tax free too.
Yeah.
You know, it's a well organized, it's a well oiled machine, and you know, it's illegal. But I really was interested in why this works, because it's a very old con. And what I realized is that it doesn't work because people don't realize it's a scam. That's not why it works. It actually works by convincing the person who's watching it, the mark, the sucker, that it is in fact a scam, but that he can somehow write himself into it.
I see. So they make it obvious it's a scam, and like everybody does, they make us think we're smart enough to do it. So it's a double scam.
It's really the scam within a scam, and that's a kind of basic prototype of almost every kind of hustle. And you
interesting.
Know, and the psychology of it is all about convincing you that you can, that you found a sure thing, that you can get an edge on the system, that you've got something to prove. And I think it's a very similar psychology that you see, you know, whether it's like the Nigerian bank scam or Bernie Madoff's billion-dollar Ponzi scheme, and some of the same verbal tricks and psychological subtleties that you see on Wall Street and on the campaign trail and on the used car lot. And so you can learn a lot, I think, about human nature and human behavior and why we allow ourselves to be deceived and why we want to believe things that are too good to be true by studying this fairly rudimentary hustle.
It's so, and we even see it on television where, you know, the shows that we like the most are the ones that make us feel smart.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, we think we've figured it out. Anybody that has a spouse, they say, hey, this is going to happen. And then it happens and you say, ah, see, I'm smart. So it's fascinating. And so you've got some of the basics like that three card game that is played. But these tricks, of course, become even much more sophisticated and complicated. And you've seen all kinds of things, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of ties between magic and well, you know, it's not just hustles. I think the thing that all this makes you realize is the extent to which, you know, perception is reality. The con artist manipulates our perception. The magician manipulates our perception and gets us to basically lead us astray into thinking that, you know, something is real that isn't. But what's neat about it is that by understanding how that works, we learn a lot about the human mind. We learn about how easily we can be distracted, how we can often fail to notice things that are very obvious. Things that happen right in our field of view when our attention is elsewhere. And, like, for example, I did an experiment with a psychologist where we brought people into a lab, and I distracted them with a coin trick and stole their watches.
Wow.
I gave them back. But
you literally got away with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's I'm not even that good at it, but there are a lot of magicians who practically make their living doing what's known as theatrical pickpocketing. You know, they're great at lifting stuff. But we found, yeah, that, like, we distracted them, and we found that, you know, about 80% of the people had no idea. And you know, it's just an example, one of many, of how when you're distracted, when you're not expecting something, things that are very obvious will go unnoticed. And, of course, you don't typically remember the things you don't notice. You're typically not aware of them. So we often overestimate our powers of observation. And, you know, this has real world consequences, like talking on a cell phone while you're driving. It's a bad idea. Not has nothing to do with the manual task of holding the phone. It's really because your mind is busy when you're, you know, on a phone holding a conversation, and that can cause you to miss things, to literally not see things. It can blind you to things, you know, like a car crossing into your lane, or a pedestrian, or a motorcycle, or whatnot. And so these things are neat, because by looking at magic tricks, you realize that there are these gaps in our awareness, that there are these cognitive biases that we have, the way our brain kind of wants to establish patterns. And these things apply they also apply to finance. Like, we tend to see patterns in the stock market, you know, because we want to. Yeah. Because our brain imposes patterns. And also, you know, perception affects, I mean, money, the whole monetary supply, if you really think about it, is based on perception and how the central banker will, you know, create money out of thin air, and the value of which is completely dependent on, you know, what people believe. And in recent years, you know, with behavioral finance, we realize that so many of these things that were once believed to be, you know, the product of an invisible hand are really these very basic human psychological foibles and glitches. And, you know, magic has a way of tapping into those.
It's amazing. It's really remarkable the way this filters over to the financial world. Alex Stone is with us, author, magician, obviously well-read, well-educated, and well-practiced and experienced in this whole world of magic. And he's sharing with us how all this affects our world and finances. The book is Fooling Houdini. We'll take a quick break. Alex, we'll be right back.
Okay.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation, or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we're back. Alex Stone is with us, author of Fooling Houdini. The website is foolinghoudini.com, but the full title is Fooling Houdini, Magicians, Mentalists, Math Geeks, and the Hidden Powers of the Mind. Alex, you know, we were talking before the break about this power of observation, and we tend to overestimate that as individuals, right?
That's right. Yeah, I think so.
How does that play into the magic? I mean, we think we see better than we really do, or that our perceptions are stronger than they really are. We think we're smarter than we really are.
You know, in many ways, I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
One of the key factors is the way that people tend to pay, the way as adults we tend to pay attention. There's this really very clever psychologist named Allison Gopnik at Berkeley, and she's written this book called The Philosophical Baby, where she talks about how we learn to pay attention as an adult. And she likes to say that when we talk about how as adults we're good at paying attention, what we really mean is that adults were good at not paying attention. In other words, really good at focusing on one thing while ignoring peripheral distractions. And that's really good for getting things done, but it also means that we can be blind to things outside the narrow field of our vision. And magic is all about getting us to focus on the wrong thing while, you know, some other secret thing is happening. And again, this doesn't mean necessarily like looking away. I mean, you can actually be looking right at something and not notice it. And that doesn't just go for our vision, that goes for our hearing, but it also goes for our logic and our analysis and how we understand, you know, whatever it be, like in work or in math or in life and in relationships. We often miss things and more than we think, and our brain has a way of filling in the gaps and sort of telling us a story based on these bits of information it picks up.
So the brain extrapolates then. The brain
exactly.
will take a partial picture and fill in the rest of it based on what should be there.
Exactly. And magic is all about getting you to fill in the picture, to create a picture that's essentially, you know, an illusion, something that can't actually be real.
You know, and I know you know all of the big names in magic. I saw David Copperfield one time in a performance, and I had what I thought was a clear view of field of vision looking right at him when he literally, flowers turned into a flame. And I'm literally going, okay, I was watching. I wasn't distracted. And so my he must have done something, and my mind filled in the blanks.
Yeah, and also, I mean, expectations have a lot to do with it. You know, we tend to see, the mind sees what it expects to see and doesn't see what it doesn't expect to see.
Wow.
And that's very critical, too. And that's part of the reason why magic tricks are best you're not really supposed to repeat them because, you know, it relies on surprise, you know, and expectations. And after, you know, more than once, you can adjust.
That's pretty amazing. And I guess part of that, too, is how the hustlers or the magicians or whoever it is, they get inside people's heads, right, to be able to do these games. And that's why, you know, it's usually a one-shot deal.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I have seen people, you know, people do fall for hustles more than once in many ways because once it's kind of like a gambler who loses and then wants to throw good money after bad.
They want to double down.
Yeah, the double down is actually big. So it's, you know, not always the case. But yeah, in general, like once you get wise to something, you know, presumably you won't fall for it a second time. Although
you would think that, right? You would think that.
But it's not always the case. But
I've seen it happen with people falling for the same scam or the same getting sucked into the multi-level marketing. They did one, it didn't work,
totally.
But they're going
to. And they do one and then they try another. Yeah. And I don't know. Yeah, it's sad.
Well, it makes you question just how reliable our memories are, doesn't it?
That's a really good point. In fact, and that's another thing that magic is great about bringing to light. You know, there's now a lot of research on how fallible our memories are. Psychologists have been able to implant false memories in patients by just the power of suggestion, getting them to think they remembered, you know, being lost in a mall as a child or an animal attack or in mock crime scenes. They've gotten all kinds of eyewitness things to change. In fact, by one estimate, it turns out that eyewitness testimony, I mean, this has impacts for our legal system because the eyewitness testimony is very bad. And by one estimate, up to 90% of wrongful convictions are due to eyewitness misidentification because our memories really are not like cameras. We don't take this perfect picture of things. We just sort of remember a few key details and then reconstruct and recreate an image of what happened after the fact. And it's often very, very has very little fidelity. And magicians exploit this all the time. And if you do magic, you realize that people remember magic tricks in all kinds of crazy ways. Because magic is, you know, someone once said that memory is attention in past tense. And since magic is all about screwing with your attention, you know, not surprising that you're going to remember it wrongly, remember the order of things wrongly, think that you shuffled the cards when you didn't, think that the magician, you know, was in view the whole time or whatnot.
Amazing. Alex Stone is our guest. The book is Fooling Houdini, Magicians, Mentalists, Math Geeks, and the Hidden Powers of the Mind, available on foolinghoudini.com. One last quick break, and I want to come back and talk, Alex, about the psychological consequences of secrecy and maybe a little bit about why people take so much pleasure in duping others. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Creating a world with less cancer takes a team effort. It takes survivors and caregivers and regular folks like you and me who all unite at Relay for Life. This year, nearly 4 million people nationwide will come together to celebrate, remember, and fight back. We're the American Cancer Society, the official sponsor of birthdays. Visit us at relayforlife.org.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Alex Stone is the guest. The book is Fooling Houdini. The website is foolinghoudini.com. Before the break, I kind of set you up there, Alex, with what's the psychological consequence of secrecy, and also this bit about how people get a lot of joy out of duping others.
Yeah, well, it turns out that, you know, everyone keeps secrets. That's people, businesses, politicians especially. it's really important to keep secrets on some level. You have to protect yourself. But then it also can have consequences. Keeping a lot of secrets, it's been found, is unhealthy. People who keep a lot of secrets get sick more. And even just writing down a secret trauma can sometimes, and burning the piece of paper can sometimes, you know, make you feel better physically and mentally.
It's stressful.
It's stressful. If you're keeping a secret in an interview, it can set off the same physiological responses that will cause a polygraph to you know, light up and increase heart rate, sweating, and whatnot. But then also, secrecy has other weird consequences. Like some people have hypothesized that maybe, you know, secrecy can heighten desire and make things seem more romantic. And that's why, you know, maybe there are such high levels of infidelity because the secrecy of this extramarital affair, say, you know, is heightens the allure of it.
Yeah, the excitement of it.
The excitement of it, exactly. And that ties in with this idea that, you know, on some level, everyone likes to deceive people. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we all are pathological liars. It just
right.
means that there's a part of us that sometimes takes pleasure in putting something over on someone. And there's a psychologist by the name of Paul Ekman, who's a very famous guy, actually, in the field of of cognitive science, who coined a term. He calls it duping delight, and that's duping delight is the pleasure that we all get from fooling people. And it's he identified three factors that sort of influence how much we experience it. And the size of the lie is one of them. The other is how hard the target is to fool, and the third is the appreciation that we win by telling it. And this is, it relates to magic, of course, because magic is all about fooling people, and magicians hold these big tournaments where they try to fool each other, and, you know, they award each other prizes for the person who can fool the most magicians. And but it's also true of everyone, you know, whether it's even the smallest white lie or fib that we tell our, you know, our wife or our boss or our coworker or our friend, it's always there. And this affects how we are, how we feel. It affects our behavior, our choices, our state of mind, our emotions, and it penetrates our lives.
It's remarkable. Now, I know you've seen a lot of magic, Alex, so I've got to ask a question. My listeners are going to want you to answer this for me. What is the most amazing magic trick you've ever seen, or that you've done, or that you've seen one of these master magicians at one of these competitions that you've seen done? We've got 30 seconds, so tell me what it is in a nutshell.
It's this guy, Juan Tamariz, who's a Spanish magician, not so well known here, but outside this country, he's kind of a legend. And he can do the most amazing things. He'll just tell someone to name a card and a number, and he'll dump the cards out on the table or borrow a deck, and they'll count to that number, and the card will be there. Or he can tell them to name a card and pull it out of his hat and just do amazing things. And he fools every magician, and he's an amazing guy. And if you ever have a chance to see him, Juan Tamariz.
Got
it. Best close-up sleight-of-hand magician in the world.
Outstanding. Alex Stone, also a good magician in his own right. He's an author, and he's not fooling around. He's got the book Fooling Houdini. Foolinghoudini.com is a website. Alex, thank you very much. I'm taking the book home with me tonight to read, and it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you. It was my pleasure as well. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.